What's fast, furious, and field programmable all over the place? This week's episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, of course. Hi there. Welcome to this here electronic engineering podcast hosted by yours truly and brought to you by eejournal.com. Well, how about we get fired up about some FPGAs this week? My first guest is Diane Kibbe from Element 14. Diane and I are digging into the details of the Element 14 Path 2 Programmable series. All right, let's go. Hi, Diane. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, Amelia. It's good to be on the show again.
Okay, so we're here to talk about the details of Element 14's Path 2 Programmable series. But before we get into the details of this year's program, this is the second year of this series. So tell me about the origin of this program and the challenges that Element 14 is looking to solve here.
Sure. If you go back about a year and a half ago, there was a lot of conversation around the learning curve and the complexity of FPGAs and SoCs. Our first path to programmable was around kind of getting rid of that misnomer that it was too complex to use. And so we offered this idea of picking people to participate live in this training and to give them access to experts that knew a lot about FPGA and giving that training and having them develop projects along the way. And it was so successful that we decided we wanted to do it again. So the first path to programmable used the Mini-Z, the Avnet Mini-Z, and this new one actually uses the Ultra 96 version 2.
Very cool. Okay, Diane, tell me more about the hardware at the heart of this program.
Sure. So as I mentioned, then the first path to programmable, we used the Mini-Z. This one will actually use a board that just came out in March. It's the Avnet Ultra 96 version 2. So this is an ARM-based and Xilinx Zynq UltraScale board. And it's really ideal for developing platforms for prototyping things like AI, IoT, and robotics. It also has some new industrial options that really allow you to use the board in harsh environments.
So Diane, if someone is chosen for this program, what exactly do they get?
Right. So each person that's selected to be part of this live experience gets access to some brand new training that just came out around the Ultra 96 version 2 board. They'll receive training on FPGA as well as system on a chip. They'll have access to experts from both Xilinx and from Avnet, and they'll be allowed to access these people online at any point. So along with the training, they'll be following along using their Ultra 96 board. In the past, and I expect this to happen again, members can also purchase their own Ultra 96 board and also follow along with the training if they're not chosen to participate as one of the members.
Cool. So what specific applications do you think this training, this series, would be good for?
I think if you combine the training and the board, a lot of our members, we think, will be able to develop different applications in some big areas that are out today, right? Like artificial intelligence, machine learning, definitely IoT, embedded computing, and even robotics.
Very cool. Okay, so if someone in my audience wants to register to enter this unique program, where should they go and what does the deadline look like?
Sure. So any members can go and register to sign up to try to be selected on the Element 14 community. The last day to actually to apply for Path to Programmable 2 is the 16th of September. So they definitely have a few weeks to get this done.
Excellent. This is super cool. Okay, Diane, it is time for your off-the-cuff question now. If you had one other thing to do in life other than high tech, what would it have been?
It definitely would have been a meteorologist. I actually started out as a meteorology major in undergrad, and then along the way just kind of kept with computer science, but would have loved to have been out there studying Hurricane Dorian right now.
That's really cool. Well, Diane, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me yet again.
Thank you.
So we're going to step up our field programmable coverage this week. Just a notch. My next guest is Jeff Tate from Flex Logics. Jeff and I are talking about the evolution of eFPGAs, the role inference is playing in the eFPGA game, and what eFPGAs really buy us as engineers. Let's go.
Thank you so much for joining me, Jeff.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks, Amelia.
Okay, so first off, for my audience who may not know, and I'm not sure who they are, but what is FlexLogic all about?
FlexLogic started doing embedded FPGA. We don't do chips. We're like ARM. So ARM licenses their processor IP, and we license FPGA IP to integrate into chips. And recently, we've also added an inference technology to our product for IP licensing, and we'll launch our first chip product, taping it out later this year.
Okay, so let's talk about that, because inference product lines are really more and more popular these days. So why do you think that is, and what was the motivation for you guys to launch this product line?
Well, on the motivation, it started with customers. There are people who use FPGAs for inference today. For example, if you're in Mountain View, where we are, and you see all these autonomous vehicles driving around, in their trunks are usually boxes full of FPGAs because they're easy prototyping tools. But they're expensive, and they're power hungry. And people like Microsoft in the Azure cloud use FPGAs every two Xeons. They have an FPGA because some workloads, like inference, run better on FPGA. So about 15 months ago, we had some customers come to us and say, FPGA is good for inference, but could you make it a lot better? And the two things is that in an FPGA, ours and others, the multiplier accumulator is designed for signal processing. So ours is 22 by 22, but you can do inference with just 8 by 8. So it's overkill. Yeah. If you could make it smaller, it could run faster, lower power. Those are both good things and be cheaper. Or you could put more in, which is what the customers wanted. So the next thing is, can you put in a lot more multipliers relative to logic, change the ratio? That was the request, and then my co-founder, who's a brilliant guy, thought about it some more and did some more things to make it even better for inference. And we launched last fall our NMAX architecture, which is based on embedded FPGA, but the MAC portion is greatly increased. It's optimized for inference. It also adds some 16-bit floating point. And we cluster the multiplier accumulators in groups of 16 to get greater efficiency and throughput. So we've been comparing our solution to other products like NVIDIA Tesla T4. And the chip that we will tape out, which is relatively small and inexpensive, will have performance that's within 40 to 75% of a Tesla T4, which is a $2,000 to $4,000 board. And we use just a single DRAM. So we'll be able to bring inference performance to price points and products that haven't been available in the past. So we're seeing a lot of interest in this product.
So, Jeff, let's circle back with your eFPGAs. Now, I remember when they first came into being in the last couple of years, but they've really grown in adoption, right?
That's true. Our salesperson started the year with a forecast, and he has increased the forecast every month since. So adoption is really taking off. It's taken time, though. You know, we have actually been at it for 5 years, 4 years since we announced the products. We got our first customers early on, but it has taken customers longer than we originally had hoped in terms of coming up the learning curve. But now that they have, and now that they see that other people are adopting, like Boeing has announced, Datong in China has announced, and a lot of them have friends who are using embedded FPGA who might not have publicly announced, you know, that leads to, you know, people like to see other people go first. So the adoption is really, really picking up. And we're making our embedded FPGA available on a broader number of nodes now as well. So we're available on almost every process node customers care about.
So for my audience who may not know, what is the value proposition for eFPGAs? Why would you say jump to that type of technology?
It's just like Microsoft using Xeons and FPGAs. First of all, you can make a chip with all hardwired logic, but you can't change it. People then put processors on to get flexibility. But Microsoft is using FPGAs to run certain workloads because certain workloads like inference and others run much better on an FPGA. So if the customer needs a flexibility in their chip to run certain kinds of workloads, the FPGA can do a better job than the processor. Now, we're not displacing processors. Every chip has processors still. But a lot of workloads like encryption, for example, run really well on an FPGA and much more efficiently than on a processor. So that's something, if they want an encryption product where they can change the encryption model on the fly, they can use FPGA, and that's one of the big adoption points.
Excellent. Well, Jeff, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Amelia.
If today's podcast just wasn't enough FPGA for you, I would strongly recommend that you check out this week's feature article from EE Journal Editor-in-Chief Kevin Morris, called High-End FPGA Showdown, Part 1, A Tale of Three Cities. In this first installment of a multi-part series, Kevin compares the new high-end FPGA families from three different vendors, Xilinx, Intel, and Achronix. Kevin investigates the underlying process technology, the FPGA logic fabric itself, the hardened resources for accelerating processing and networking, and even the unique and novel features and capabilities of each new family. Oh yeah, there's some really good stuff in there. So you can check out this article by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com, or just head on over to eejournal.com and check out the front page. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, keyword EE Journal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by yours truly. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can check out the Fish Fry archive or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of September 6th, 2019, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.